My name is Teresa Gill Walker, and I am here today with my mother, Frances J. Gill, to do some oral history that will go into the archives of Gainsborough Library in Roanoke, Virginia. Mom, just a couple of questions to get the formalities out of the way. When and where were you born?
I was born in Fairfield, Virginia. The 3rd of September, 1927.
It's hard to let that part go, huh? Fairfield, Virginia, which is approximately an hour from Roanoke, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Covington, Virginia.
Which is another hour.
Another.
The different way.
Yeah. One's off different way, right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, did you have any brothers or sisters?
No.
And your parents were from Fairfield as well, right?
Both of them were from Fairfield, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you grew up in a home?
Yes.
Yeah. Did your family have gardens and all
My
that?
Father had, yeah, he had a garden.
Yeah, and an apple tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Love the apple tree. When you were growing up, what type of activities did you participate in?
Not many, because I was not, as you would say, a sociable child. But I did, you know, I did a lot of drama. I really did a lot of drama.
In theater, which is probably where Craig gets it from.
Yeah, and did a lot of reading.
Weren't you a Girl Scout?
Yep, I was a Girl Scout.
Yeah.
And, you know, the regular things. But as far as sports and stuff was concerned, mm-hmm. I didn't go out for that too mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. Basically because of my health, which was not really that good, and also because I wasn't interested in it.
You were independent all the way back then.
Yeah, very.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school at Watson. Watson was straight through school, you know, from first grade to the 12th grade. So I went to school in Watson in Covington, Virginia.
And how old were you when you graduated?
I was 16.
Yeah, so you graduated early. You were a brain, huh?
I wouldn't say so.
Mom, you graduated 2 years early.
Yeah, well.
That is a brainiac, even mm-hmm. in today's standards. Graduating 2 years early.
Mm-hmm.
So you went, and where'd you go to college?
I went to college in Dixie Hospitals / Hampton Institute, because we took our classes and whatever at Hampton Institute, and we are Hampton Institute alumni.
But you prefer to be called Dixie, huh?
Yes.
What'd you go to school for?
Nursing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now, I remember you telling me when you got out of nursing, you decided you wanted to join the military.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you got out?
I guess I must have been 20.
You were 20?
Mm-hmm.
And what year was that? 46?
I'm not good at years, but I know I was 20.
So World War II was over with.
World War, yeah. I graduated, I guess I graduated in 45, and I wasn't old enough to join the service. I'd signed up for the service. I wasn't old enough to join it. So I came to Roanoke, and I worked at Borough Memorial Hospital until I was 21, and I went into the service.
So you lived in Roanoke and worked at Borough Memorial Hospital for a year?
I got out of school in March. We graduated in March. And mm-hmm. I went into the Army like the last of September, because I was supposed to go in on the 3rd of September. And I had an acute appendectomy. And therefore, I had to wait until I recovered from that.
They gave you a long recovery period than they do now.
Well, you know, I was going into the service, so I had to be ready for stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, while I was at Burl, I worked with some doctors, but the two that I really remember was Dr. Downing and Dr. Clater.
Really?
Yes.
Dr. Downing and Dr. Clater.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, Mom.
Dr. Clater was the one that did my appendectomy. I remember him talking to me when I was having a lot of pain, and I remember him talking to me. And then I stretched out and I said, you can go home now because my pain is gone. And the next thing I knew, I was on operating table. That was one of the first things I learned in nursing, after I got out of nursing, was that if the pain leaves, the appendix is burst. That was one of my first things from my... I learned a lot from my illness, but that was the first thing that I learned from the illness throughout the year.
Wow, very early. Mm-hmm. You was a brand new nurse.
Yeah.
So what was Dr. Clay like? Was he tough?
No, he was.
He was nice?
No, he wasn't. He was. He and Dr. Downing both. They were
perfectionists?
Yeah. They were one of the best doctors out. As far as patient and nurse relationship, they were one of some of the best doctors I've worked with.
Well, that's saying a lot because you've been nursing over 60...
Over 50-some years. Is it 60 years?
Yes, Mom. Okay. You've been nursing for over 60 years.
Right.
61 years to be exact.
Well, I stopped nursing.
You never stopped being a nurse. And you still have your license.
Yep.
So, you've been nursing for a long, long time. Now, question. You dealt with the hospital side of Gainesboro. But did you ever deal with the party side of Roanoke and Gainesboro?
Not really.
So you never tipped over to the yard?
No.
As we call it, or Henry Street?
My connection with Henry Street is when I was still living in Covington, because the theater they had, I cannot remember the name of the theater, but it had a movie and a live concert, mm-hmm. stage and what have you. And we would come from Covington and go to that. And then my parents and I and some of the friends from Covington would come over to the hotel and have our meal, which the food was delicious.
Really?
And we had, and I remember Henry Street as being very...
vibrant?
Yeah, right. That's the word I need. Because they had everything. They had music stores. They had hotels. They had cleaning shops. They had barber shops. Henry Street was really a thriving era.
A vibrant community.
Right. And I must say, everything was neat. It wasn't just put together. Mm-hmm. All the stores, all the things, what have you.
People took
pride in it.
Mm-hmm. Well taken care of. Mm-hmm. They took care of their community.
Right.
Yeah, so when you left the area and joined the military, were you nervous about being the only black around going into a field that had just approved for blacks to really come into the military and be given the proper respect after, I think it was after Roosevelt. Who's after Roosevelt?
I don't know, but I wasn't because I had never been taught. I had never been taught to be nervous about being the only one. I end up being the only nurse working at Allegheny.
Only
black nurse, and I don't think was ever another black nurse working there. And I worked at CNO Hospital in Clifton Forge, and I was the only black there. And you know, it just didn't. And I was in the hospital when I was in service. A lot of areas that when I was in Kansas, I was the only black in my platoon. But when I was in Hawaii, there was a few blacks. Mm-hmm. One was a very good friend of mine and still a very good friend of mine. But there was not a whole lot of people to me or for me to associate with, which didn't bother me, because if I ran into people that were prejudiced, I felt like it was their problem, it wasn't mine. So therefore, it didn't bother me. I addressed it.
Mm-hmm.
I addressed it professionally. I addressed it. But it didn't bother me.
Wow. Well, that goes back to a conversation that you and I had when we were talking about how independent and strong the women were in our family. And through me going back and just sitting around thinking and listening and talking, something I found very pertinent was you telling me how great-grandma built y'all up that way. You know, even though, you know, great-granddad was there and he was a vibrant, strong part of the family, great-grandma seemed determined to make sure that the women knew their self-worth,
mm-hmm.
and were proud of it and were strong in it.
Yeah.
And didn't, you know, because, you know, and she, you said she used to talk to y'all about that even when y'all were little,
mm-hmm.
sitting on the porch. But she told the men that too, didn't she? She told all y'all that, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She would do through her work, and she'd come out and she tell us an awful lot of things, and some of the main things really stuck with me, you know, how to live, why you're living, the way you're living, mm-hmm. how to pick your friends,
mm-hmm.
how to recognize who was friends and who wasn't,
mm-hmm.
and how to solve your problems without violence, hard feelings, or mm-hmm. what have you. And she also was telling us, regardless of what a person looks like or feel like, you speak to them. You don't have to go down where they are, but you can speak to them, because you never know who you have to ask for a drink of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You never know. Like she says, going up, you don't know who you're going to meet coming down.
Well, see, now that leads right into something else. I'll never forget you taught me this when I was real young. You know, you have to carry yourself in a certain way, because you never know who you're going to see and what walk of life or wherever, probably reiterating what Grandma taught you, because there was a nurse that you had worked with in Kansas.
Oh, the situation. No, I had come home before being transferred to Kansas City, to Kansas, Fort Riley in Kansas. And, you know, here I am, new 21, I guess I was still 21. And the nurse, there was a person in the seat beside me. I had on my uniform, because we had to travel in uniforms, but she didn't have on a uniform or anything. And we were talking, and we talked about everything. And I was talking about how proud I was, you know, to be in the service and what have you. And from Covenant, Virginia, mm-hmm. I guess she got on maybe around Richmond, to Kansas. We talked about
Are
different
you serious?
Things and
that
what
long?
Have you. Yeah. And
wow.
So she, when I got to Kansas and, you know, got everything in line, and we had this large meeting with the director, you know, new nurses with the director.
Director of nurses?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so when I went in, the first thing I looked at, you know, I was the only black there. And the second...
You were the only black
in
for
that,
real?
In that thing.
Platoon.
And the next thing I looked at was the lady that had traveled with me all that time,
mm.
was the director of nurses.
So it's like a 2-day ride.
And she, you know, that's why I keep telling you all, I could have been on that train. I could have been acting crazy. I
mm-hmm.
could have been doing this. I could have been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And who was I riding with?
But your boss
but
or boss. She was your boss of bosses.
Yes.
She was your boss's boss.
Yeah. So
wow, what an impression
so,
you just
so,
made on her.
So you never know.
You must have made quite a
You never question. Know who you're gonna have to come in contact with. You never know what's going on. So I, you know, say always carry yourself the way you want to be presented.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have learned that from you,
mm-hmm.
and I have tried to do that, and it has come back to me, and because I listened to what you said,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's something young people always need to you know, listen to your elders, because they know what they're talking about. Were you the first person in the family to go to college?
No. No, I had my uncle, my mother's oldest brother. He went to Hampton. He fell off a roof in Hampton. That was at the time that when he went to school where Hampton was being built, and part of the students would pay their tuition by working, and he was repairing the roof, and he fell off the roof.
So after Great Uncle Sam, you were the next person to go to college.
Well, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
You were.
I guess.
Out of that big family, that was a big family, mm-hmm. and you were the next one to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and the next generation.
There's a lot. There's
all
a
of
lot.
Us went. Yeah. Whether the parents went to college or not, the
mm-hmm.
kids went.
Mm-hmm.
That next generation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but think that, you know me, but I can't help but think that the family seeing the impact of how your life was changed and bettered, and how you were able to change and better the life of grandma and granddaddy through knowledge or whatever, and or pride,
mm-hmm.
Didn't have a strong reflection on, you know, our family, making sure that our kid, you know, that their kids followed in your footsteps. You were kind of like the leader for everybody.
Well,
and you still
not really.
I mean leader as far as martyr, you know.
Because their parents had the same upbringing that my parents had.
Right, but see, they saw what you accomplished.
Yeah. They
didn't go to college, but when they saw what you accomplished because you went to college, they made sure that their kids went to college.
Yeah, okay.
That's where I'm saying the difference was made.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think from your generation of people who had kids, I think all of us went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we didn't want to go or went into the military. I can't think, you know, you're talking about goo gobs of people now, but I don't mm-hmm. think any of us haven't gone to college and it's been insisted on.
Right.
And so that's an important thing to point out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a very important thing to point out.
Okay.
To show, you know, what you have done has made a difference to an entire family,
mm-hmm.
extended family.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk to you about something my son is always questioning. He's heard you give him the history of, you know, when you were living in Washington and when Martin was killed, we looked at a documentary about what was going on then, but it's not as poignant as you hear from someone who's actually there.
Well, I was on my way from Washington to Covington because I was working in Washington at the time. And I was halfway to Covington, and I heard on the radio that Martin Luther King had been assassinated. And it was strange because it looked like everything had definitely changed. And by the time I got to Covington, you know, everybody was talking about it. Everybody was closed in and what have you. And the result, and I could see the change that it made, how people were feeling sad, don't know where we're going from here. You know, one of our leaders are gone. But what really hit me is when I went back to Washington to work. And going into Washington, I had to show identification in order to get into Washington. And on my way to my apartment, two or three times I had to show identification. This was in the daytime. I had to show identification. And then when I went home and I left for work that night, there were soldiers on just about every corner. There were jeeps around, and from my house to the VA, I was stopped at least four times to show my identification. I was in uniform and what have you. It was a horrible feeling. And 14th Street, which was a very prominent street of Washington, and for blacks, because most of the things there were owned by blacks and stuff, it looked like a wall towing zone. Mm-hmm. And so when I get to work, you know, I'm looking, what in the world? And we had to have, they had to give us a notification, which I wasn't there and I hadn't gotten it. But they had to give us badges to wear for at least a week to wear when we were in the street. Not only when we were driving or whatever, but when we were in the street. So it gives you an idea of what these people, a very, very small idea about what some of these people are going through when they're in the war, because that's what it looked like.
It felt like a war.
It felt just, that's what it felt like, and soldiers were everywhere. Everywhere.
Because people, they got so angry that they destroyed their own community.
They destroyed their own community.
That took decades to build up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're still building it up. Mm-hmm. Still building it up. What do you think the civil rights movement and desegregation has had? What kind of impact do you think it's had on the community? Not the world, just the community.
And I lived in a whole lot of communities. Which one are
I'm
you
talking about
referring
Roanoke.
To? Oh, Roanoke.
Because you dealt with Roanoke before desegregation
before and
then after.
When I came back and worked. Yeah. I can't say too much about that, because when I come to Roanoke with my children, I had to fight a lot of segregation that we're looking at that you could see. And a lot that you couldn't see, a lot that was under politics, under this, under that. And I did a lot of fighting then, because my children was in school, and you know, you really had to fight in order to do it. But there were just such a few people fighting for the rights of themselves and their children and what have you. And when I say people, I mean blacks. That it really hurt my feeling, because there was an incident at Fleming, and we were trying to get housing for some of the guys that had been involved in this incident.
Are you talking about the riots?
And they, we could not get the parents of the children that was involved in the incident to come out and work with us. There were a very few of us. We were called concerned citizens. And then we got to a point where we were bringing people in from Washington. And in order for us to get somebody to come in from Washington so these children could get schooling, we had to have at least one of the parents'
mm-hmm.
name. And what we got was finally able to get was one parent. She let us use her name. She was a single parent. She let us use her name, and that was, you know, that really hurt. We were successful in what we were trying to do, but all these people in Roanoke, African American Negroes, whatever you want to call them, and there were like 10 of us, at least 10 of us that they didn't, you know, that would only work with us. So years later, we have my daughter is working to further the education of the children in school. And what do we have? We still have 6 to 8 people working to get this done, and other people are just not really caring. So I won't say that it has changed a lot. not in Roanoke.
Well, what about the Gainesboro? The Gainesboro community. I mean, you know, like, okay, you felt like that you were out there by yourself.
With the very few.
And I more than understand that.
Now we do have, we had it then, but it was kind of hard to pull in these people like the Gainesboro, the Melrose Library and what have you, because they had their jobs, and like I say, it became political. So it was hard for them to do that.
Are you talking about the people in the Gainesboro and the Melrose community were afraid to come out?
Not community, no. I'm saying the people that worked in the libraries and in the things or what have you. I don't know why the people are not involved. I do not know.
Well, the people in the libraries were involved, though.
I said the people in the library, not the community.
Oh.
They are working at a lot of things that really work. They are. But where is your children? I mean, I'm talking about children now. They're working at things that work. They have improved a lot of things that have worked. The libraries that have had kids, they have all kind of programs, and they are helping the children and whatever. But what I'm speaking of is who you fighting for the schools. You're fighting that this don't happen in schools. You're fighting for this in school. I'm not talking about the community as a whole. I'm talking about who is fighting for our children. Maybe this is important to me. It's very important to me. But as Roanoke has changed drastically as far as the civil rights is concerned. It has changed. And as I say, Henry Street was beautiful. We had everything, but once desegregation took over, then we lost. We lost everything. So,
that boils down to one of my major arguments with desegregation. Because, see, we didn't want to be equal but separate. But I think one of the arguments that I have that we as Africans in America have done is we have assimilated so much to other things that we didn't have access to that perhaps psychologically we didn't think we had access to were better because we didn't have access to it, we thought was better. And we've lost a lot in our community as far as businesses go. Mm-hmm. And in losing those businesses, we've also lost
our identity.
Identity and our voice. Mm-hmm. Because if you look back, I mean, if it wasn't for the libraries in the black community, those people who do something for the community or want to do something for the community, they find each other, at least from my experience, we find each other at the library, especially Gainesboro. Mm-hmm. We have found each other and branched out to do other things. And, you know, and our kids are viewing that because they hang out at the library. Mm-hmm. This is their one safe haven in the community. And they hang out at the library, and then they, you know, so they're able to see us forming community actives. Mm-hmm. But it is a small few.
But like I say, Roanoke has made strides. They have made great strides from the time I worked here. Because what you went to, if you weren't admitted in most hospitals, and if you did was admitted, you went to the basement. So it has made an awful lot. Burrell was the first and I guess the only black hospital which gave a lot of good care. Mm-hmm. But they have branched out. They have mixed it. Roanoke has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. I mean, in going to stores and doing this, Roanoke has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. But I guess the schools are just the one that bothers me the most.
And you feel like that the community needs to get more involved in what the school system is doing.
Right, right.
Okay, I'll give you that one because I know because, mm-hmm. I mean,
okay,
that's an argument that we will always agree on. Isn't that funny? It's something we actually agree on. So, And the last thing I wanted to bring up with you, I guess is something that I've always looked at, is that you have you promoted strength as a black woman, as an African-American woman. You have made great strides. We have always gone places and been and did things where we were the only black family there, including going on summer vacation every year from 1966 on, when everybody used to say, why y'all going on vacation? We used to be like, I don't know. But now that we're grown, we appreciate it, through putting four girls through college, purchasing your own home. And you've done that, and I applaud you, because you have done that, building up the strength of your black daughters as women and not tearing down black men, as a lot of single women have done that I've seen. So I commend you for that, because our black brothers are necessary and important. But I don't think you realize what a major milestone. When I was growing up in Roanoke, I was the only kid I knew in Roanoke or Covington that went on vacation every year. And I'm talking from north to south, from Canada to Florida.
Well, I tell you what.
And these kids came from double parent households.
I've always felt it was important for children to know other than their community. So when we left in June for 2 weeks, we never went to the same place twice. And we spent those 2 weeks on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
in the car.
For instance, we went to Canada. We went on one side of Canada, New York, and we came out on the Detroit, Michigan side of there. We ran around in Canada for all that length of time. And we would go one way and come back the other way, where we seen a lot. We went to museums. We went to this and that. I was trying my best to give you all a look at life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you got out there, nothing would be strange to you. You would know how to handle it and what have you. This was good for us to be together for 2 weeks and not have to worry about nothing.
And you did. I remember one year I had a lot of white friends growing up in Covington and hung out with them as much or more than my black friends who were in my neighborhood. And they started calling me Uncle Tom. Oh, my God, they used to tease the heck out of me. And, I just played it off. I was like, But I'll never forget that year we went to Canada, and you took us to Uncle Tom's cabin. And I used, I brought back my little memorabilia, whatever. And when I went to go see my friends, and they would tease me by being Uncle Tom, because you had taken me to Canada and taken me to the real Uncle Tom's cabin. I was 12 years old, and that was 36 years ago. Good God. And I was able to come back to them and school them on who Uncle Tom really was. And 32 years later, I am still schooling people when they use Uncle Tom in a negative, derogatory manner. I am schooling them on who Uncle Tom was and how he, worked with freeing the slaves and this and that and that and this. And, and how that what they are deriving as a negativity regarding Uncle Tom is what Hollywood has displayed to them, and again being manipulated by a small populace when it comes to that. So I want to thank you for that, because that gave me a lot of strength. Because you know how much I got teased when I was a kid, but that gave me some staying power. Because I was standing, and they laughed at first, but after a while, I didn't get called Uncle Tom anymore, because they knew what the real means. So you probably taught a lot of people that summer, because I sure was saying it all summer long, running to the house and get my stuff that you showed us, that we got back. So, you've done some...
Well, along with that, I've tried to teach you all about relationship between races. I've tried to teach you all to identify with the person, not with the race, because that's completely wrong. It has been done to us because one person does something, they think all blacks do it. And it has been done to us, and I have tried to teach you all, get to know the people, the person, and you know, you don't judge one person by everybody else. And I have tried to teach you all that you can relate and be friends with any race.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, what was your reaction when Obama became president? How did you feel? What did you think about?
I had two reactions. I'm very proud. Extremely proud. And then my next reaction was, we have got to pray that this man makes it. That he makes it. We have to pray to make him strong, because they will fight a man when he's trying to do what this guy has got to do. Mm. Because we've had other presidents in the situation, not as bad, mm-hmm. but in the same situation. And they have knocked them down to the ground mm-hmm. before they saw success. And here's a black man. And how far are they going to knock him down before he is successful in what he's trying to do? So I was very proud, very, very proud. And I felt
to say
a certain prayer for him mm-hmm. and hoping that people throughout this country is praying that he is successful. Not as, what's his name? Lombard says he's hoping that he will fail,
which will ruin the country. I mean,
and that means he hoped the country go down the drain rather than to have a black man be successful.
Yeah, which is totally
so. You know, I have all those different things, and after thinking about it, the next morning I got up thinking, how proud our children. I'm back to children again. How proud our children have to be to know that once upon a time, you say what you want to be, and they say president.
Now
and people look at them
real.
And say, ah. But now they can say president and be proud
and
of
be
it.
Be proud.
Yes.
Well, we're going to go out on a good note. I just want people to remember how important education is. And because you were strong and not allowing the fact that you were an African American to inhibit you, rather it empowered you. I want people to realize that, you know, you got to do stuff that people all over the world have never even dreamed about doing. And because you got an education and because you didn't let anything stop you. So I want people to know that you were in Hawaii before it was even a state. Tell me a little bit about that and we'll go out on that tip. I mean, most people haven't made it to Hawaii now. And you were living there before it became commercialized.
Yeah, and it's a completely different thing. When I was there, the Hawaiians ran their country. There was no segregation. Because we'd gone into a restaurant, my girlfriend and I, and, you know, these people here called a waiter because they did not want to sit beside me. They wanted us to be moved. And the waiter said very politely, if you cannot sit where you are sitting because it's beside them, then you need to leave. Now, you'll never hear that. You will never hear that now.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful because, you know, they had families in the parks. You would see families in the parks enjoying themselves. You would see, you go to concerts, and people were not dressed up and what have you. They were dressed, period, and you could enjoy your concerts and what have you. When I went back 3-4 years ago, it was completely different. I mean, it was asphalt city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
cement.
The buildings were high. There were parks, but there was parks like that parks. There were no empty spaces. There were, and you could tell, like we can tell, quote,
segregation.
I mean, you have to.
I've heard that.
You have to see it You have to feel it, but it's there. It has changed to such an extent that it was just
heartbreaking.
Yes, it was. I called my girlfriend that was in Texas, was in Hawaii with me. I called her when we came back. Angela and I came back to the hotel. And I called her, and I was crying. And she said, "What is wrong with you?" And I said, "Battle is nothing like I dreamt about it. I wanted to come back." She said, "I told you. When I came back through there, I told you how it was." It's beautiful. It's still beautiful and what have you, but the situations are completely different.
So you got to experience the real essence of the true raw Hawaii.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely true, because you had an education.
Mm-hmm.
And you went into the military and became an officer.
Mm-hmm.
Who were you, a lieutenant?
I was a first lieutenant, and then I was a second lieutenant. And when I got out, I had been given papers for a captain, but I had got married, and I got out.
So, you know, and this is all in the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, during the Korean War,
mm-hmm.
that this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you, a black woman from a small little country town, born in another smaller country town, if you want to give it that much props,
mm-hmm.
did all of that. And because you got an education, and because you had no fear and you had God in your heart. That's awesome. I don't think you realize how phenomenal your accomplishments are. I don't think you grasp it.
But you know, I want to put one thing out here. And that is, it's the way you carry yourself. You don't have to be, forceful in what I want and will not accept. Because I have been on wards where doctors will come in and tell the little dirty jokes. The nurses laugh. I don't. I might have heard one dirty joke from, and that's it. They never said anything else again. I mean, it's how you accept things.
Exactly.
And how you don't accept them.
Mm-hmm.
You let people know by your action
mm-hmm.
that you will not accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
We need to not laugh at something or accept something and then go later.